Small business owners are always passionate about their work, and they have a lot on the line. Let Verizon help champion your small business dream. Whether you own a small business or scaling one or starting one from scratch, you need Verizon Small Business Days. From April 22nd through April 28th, you can partner with Verizon Business Experts for small business support. During Verizon Small Business Days, you can receive a free tech check with a one-on-one meeting with a Verizon Business Expert. Plus, Verizon Business Experts will provide you with personalized advice and solutions that are tailored to your specific small business needs. Take advantage of special offers and deals during Verizon Small Business Days and get more for your business. Verizon has your back. Don't miss out. Book an appointment today. Just call 1-800-483-4428 or go to verizon.com/smallbusiness.
Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones, from powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY, a big idea that inspired the world to invest differently, and still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
My mission is simple, to make you money. I'm here to level the playing field for all investors. There's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise to help you find it. Mad Money starts now.
Hey, I'm Cramer. Welcome to Mad Money. Welcome to Cramerica. Other people make friends, I'm just trying to make you a little money. My job is not just to entertain, but put days like today into context, so call me at 1-800-743-CNBC or tweet me, Jim Cramer. Geez, you know what? They got to those momentum stocks today, didn't they? The enterprise software, the accelerated computing stocks, they were beginning to feel like they would never go down. Why? Well, you know what? We had a couple of noisy quarterly reports from some artificial intelligence faves, and that was enough to undo a chunk of the recent AL rally. Yeah, rally. I've got to tell you, this artificial intelligence, you know I'm a big believer in the theme, right? But I can't deny that these stocks had gotten overextended, even myself. And I, to AI, well, let's just say, I've been on it for a long time. Today's the climb with the Dow dipping 69 points, S&P losing 0.65%, the NASDAQ late, NASDAQ plunging 1.6%. For once, had very little to do with interest rates, which were flat, or last night's State of the Union speech, or even employment, which were unsurprising, at least to the market. But it stung in some sectors because the stocks that had been the most beloved for weeks suddenly became the most hated.
Buy, buy, buy! Sell, sell, sell!
It shows you how fickle this market can be. Of course, you can't blame investors for being capricious, right? I mean, that's the nature of the business. It's why we will play MI Diversified later in the show. And I don't want you to be able to say, I've been blown out by the bear. You want fickle? Consider the Labor Department's non-farm payroll report this morning, 8:30 a.m. We have a pathetic system of job compilation. It showed today in ways that gave the bulls some very good news. First, what flashed was non-farm payrolls. They grew by 275,000 jobs last month. Wow, I thought that was going to crush the market. Way too hot. But it turns out the previous 2 months were overstated by 167,000 jobs, giving the Fed plenty of leeway to do whatever's necessary to keep the plane flying. Think rate cuts. Remember, they're not trying to do soft landing or hard landing. This one, keep it flying. Now, wage gains are diminishing, with average hourly income up by just 0.1% from the month before. Obviously not good if that's what you're trying to make. Good if you're the Fed saying, and maybe we're winning. The unemployment rate itself is at 3.9%, still strong, but no longer white hot. The experts slow to be 3.7%. That combination did lead to some confusion, though confusion means sell. Some would argue that these numbers put a May rate cut back on the table. But to me, one look at our game plan for next week tells me that we should be waiting for some more data points before we jump to any conclusions. We do have the Consumer Price Index on Tuesday and the Producer Price Index on Thursday. These are important inflation readings that could have some real influence on the Fed and kind of, let's say, make trading go a little upside down. So why not wait and see before we make any conclusions? All right, well, what else is coming on this, what used to be, frankly, a slow week that isn't anymore? We used to have an earnings season, a set of weeks devoted to quarterly reports. Now it feels like every week is an earnings week, including next week. I mean, Oracle kicks things off, reporting on Monday after the close. Now, we sold Oracle for the Chapel Trust at a loss because I have a two strikes policy and Oracle missed barely two quarters in a row. Maybe they could put up big numbers this time. That would be terrific for the people who still own Oracle, but I won't look back because that's undisciplined. For now, the stock, I'm calling it in the penalty box. We also hear from Vail Resorts, which caught a rare pre-earnings downgrade today. Whenever you see an analyst stick his neck out like that right before the quarter, well, I call it worrisome. Maybe they know something we don't. Similarly, the other day, I saw a downgrade of On Holding, okay? Now, that's a sneaker company because it got to me. Because On reports on Tuesday morning, this business has been hot, but it's fashion. And fashion can get non-hot very quickly. Now, I've been recommending On Holding for a long time, and it's up big. Plus, the downgrade was only a valuation call, but it still gave me pause, so I'm hesitant to recommend this one, say, buying on Monday ahead of that. No, we're not going to play the game. Now, Tom Kingsbury worked miracles at Burlington Stores when he ran it from 2008 to 2018, and now he's running Kohl's, which we hear from in the morning, and I think this one may be an encore worthy of the ages. Kohl's, if you haven't noticed, is rebranding itself as Kohl's and Sephora, the fast-growing cosmetic shop that has a tie-in with the company. I think it might be worth speculating. When I went by mine the other day, I was kind of pleasantly surprised. Now there's Dollar Tree on Wednesday morning, and Wall Street's had this long-running love affair with the dollar stores, so just wait to hear the praise the analysts are going to heap on this one. I actually find the fawning, quite frankly, a little embarrassing, but Dollar Tree has a good handle on the psyche of the American consumer. How deep is the love? Dollar Tree bought Family Dollar 10 years ago, and it hasn't done anything noteworthy with it. Yet it hasn't mattered to the stock. It may be like me, we love the candy aisle. What can I say? Where I used to go with my late pop, here we are at the South Philly location, about the socks I'm in ahead of an Eagles game. We also get more results. We get results from Williams-Sonoma, okay? Now, this stock's been electric, but nobody seems to talk about it. A year ago, it was at 121, and now it's over 100 points higher. The stock should never have been so low in the first place, but it got clobbered by the Fed. While I'm a big believer in CEO Laura Alber, I worry that the stock's coming in too hot, which is why I was glad to see Williams-Sonoma pulling back so hard today. Think Costco. That one came in too hot, didn't it? After the close, we get results from Lennar, the big home builder. And as we heard last night from Nick Fink of Fortune Brands Innovations, that's the new name for Fortune Brands Home, we've got a massive housing shortage in this country. The biggest winners here are the home builders themselves, and it's hard to find a better one than Lennar. Toll goes head-to-head with Lennar for my bet. As usual, Executive Chair and Co-CEO Stuart Miller will give us his must-listen-to state of the home building industry. But I can pretty much predict what he's going to say. Tremendous orders, great spring selling season ahead, moderate inflation, housing shortage, higher interest rates. It's a delicious brew, though. That's produced spectacular results for this company. This thing is a horse. Thursday morning, the dollar store love affair continues. This time it's going to be with Dollar General, which has brought back the much-loved Ted Vasos, the CEO. Hey, no, memo to Ted, could you fill the aisles, please, of my Dollar General? I feel like it's a bowling alley with I'm the only guy in it. Now, I know the core consumer stretch and sick of inflation. I bet it'll tell a story of price cutting that the analysts will lap up. We also hear from another company with a ridiculously hot stock, and that's Dick's Sporting Goods, long a favorite of Cramer, by the way. This darn thing's going from 101 since long-term interest rates peaked in October to 181 now. It's coming in too hot. Let's be careful. After the close, we get the most important quarter of the week, which is Adobe. That has had a rough stretch. This one's fallen from 630 to 551 since the first days of February. Highly unusual decline for this stock. If Adobe keeps falling thanks to wider weakness in the enterprise software stocks, it could be a buying opportunity. As their suite of products is frankly unassailable, I get it with my daughter. They're incredible what you can accomplish with this thing. Especially good for small, medium-sized businesses that want dynamite websites. Makes you look like you're a big company. Now, even if you don't like the stock, CEO Shantanu Narayen runs an amazingly informative conference call. Want a roller coaster? Hop onto the Ulta Beauty call. We had Oddity Tech on this weekend. If you want to play that cosmetic trade, that's a good one. Oddity and Elf are the two that are crushing it within that place. Finally, on Friday, I should say Oddity's really... Oddity is more self to the consumer, but Ulta is when you go through the Ulta aisles, you're really amazed to see how much Elf they have. And you know I like Elf very much. It's been a big win for the show. Finally, on Friday, Jabil reports, and this contract manufacturer is just on fire. They already told us how incredible the year's been, but I can't get enough of Jabil because they manufacture in so many different verticals. So you've learned so much. By the end of next week, the buzz will be all about NVIDIA's conference that Jensen Huang throws, running from March 18th to 21st. And all I can say is don't let the cynics get you down about that, what I regard as being a very special couple of days for us. Now, there's real earnings power there, and the true revolution in computing is going on. It's headquartered where? It's headquartered at NVIDIA. Bottom line, you need to keep an eye on the consumer and producer price index numbers next week. But don't forget to follow individual companies, because it seems like earnings season just never ends these days. And secretly, I kind of like that. Austin in Minnesota. Austin.
How's it going, Jim?
I'm doing well, Austin. Tell me how you're doing.
I'm doing great. So listen, your picks have done amazing for me in the past. So I'm wondering what you think about Meta and the upcoming company involvement in the metaverse.
I have to tell you, Meta got a real wind, real tailwind this week because of the problems that are going on with TikTok and our nation's capital. And I think you step with it no matter what. I think Mark Zuckerberg's doing a remarkable job at Meta. And I am standing by him 100%. Let's go to Harish in Washington. Harish.
Hey, Jim. Booyah.
Booyah, man. What's up?
Long-time listener, first-time caller. Thank you and your team so much for your research and analysis. And thank you for your service to people like us.
You're quite welcome. I'm doing it. Look, I do my job every day. I come to work and I try to do good. And I really appreciate what you're saying. Thank you.
Okay. My question is Alphabet worth the hold or buy or sell? As it seems like it's behind the AI race publicly, even though they have been doing AI internally for so many years. Shall I sell it? Do you see this?
Okay, so I go over this every day with Jeff Marks, who's my partner for the Chapel Trust. Okay, he runs the trust with me. And I've got to tell you, as we've been telling investors, members of the club, I don't really care for Alphabet, but it's what they can do that makes me want to keep it. Not what it is doing, but what it can do. They have a lot of optionality. I want to go to Alex in South Carolina. Alex.
Yes, I'm calling about the company Toast. They had a good quarter.
They did.
And I'm a long-term investor, and I don't like these high flyers. And I was just wanting to see your intake on this.
Okay, I was surprised that they had such a good quarter. Their technology is clearly superior to the other guys. The reason why I was surprised, because having been in the restaurant business, these companies come and go, and people rip them out, do whatever they want. But this Toast has staying power because their technology is superior. And I still think it's not worth $13 billion, but I've got to tell you, it is doing very well. All right, don't forget to follow the companies that are reporting next week, but you really need to keep your eyes on the inflation readings to get a sense of where this market might be heading next. On Mad Money Tonight, you probably know about the Magnificent Seven, but what about the Super Seven? They're powering Europe's stock market higher. We're taking a trip overseas to dig into the list of foreign winners. Then gold is finally having its day in the sun, but is the rally just getting started or are we late to the game? I'm going off the charts to find out. And even if we're near record highs, you still need a diversified portfolio to be prepared for any major market move. So I'm breaking down your portfolios when we play MI Diversified. So stay with Cramer.
Don't miss a second of Mad Money. Follow at Jim Cramer on X. Have a question? Tweet Cramer. Hashtag Mad Mentions. Send Jim an email to madmoney@cnbc.com or give us a call at 1-800-743-CNBC. Miss something? Head to madmoney.cnbc.com.
When you're hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging to connect with candidates faster. Plus, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Mad Money. Just go to Indeed.com/Mad Money right now and support this show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Mad Money. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The hand-wringing about the Magnificent Seven dominating the action here, our stock market's not the only one with a breadth problem. In fact, if we're talking about a narrowing of the market, Europe's got it much worse than we do, especially in recent months. Do you know that just five stocks accounted for 45% of the MSCI Europe Index gains in January and February? Something that Citi's equity strategy team pointed out in a fantastic note that I loved and we passed around just last week. And I want to thank Dr. Beata Manthi for coming up with it. The analysts at Citi then went a step further, running a screen for Europe mega-cap stocks with similar characteristics to our Magnificent Seven. Think high margin, solid earnings growth, big economic moats. Although if you use that standard, it'd be the Magnificent Six at best because Tesla no longer makes the cut. We know the Magnificent Seven was actually the American remake of Seven Samurai. But now Citi says there's a European remake of our remake, and they call that the Super Seven. Even better, the Super Seven are substantially cheaper than American's originals. And I got to tell you something, these analysts believe the group has a lot more room to play. Maybe you take some of these down because they're household names. I really like them. I'm going to walk you through them because Citi's Super Seven makes for a great list of companies, all of which trade over here, either on an exchange or as a fairly liquid over-the-counter names that you can buy through your normal brokerage account. Now, the leader of the Super Seven is probably pretty, let's just say, obvious. Novo Nordisk, the Danish pharmaceutical titan that came out with the original GLP-1 shot for diabetes and weight loss, Ozempic. They were years ahead of Kramer fave Eli Lilly on this one. Just yesterday, we found out the GLP-1 pill they're developing could be a lot more effective than the one Lilly's got in the pipeline. And today, the FDA expanded the label on Novo Nordisk's drug to include helping prevent heart attacks. The insurers will think that's very good. Now, regular viewers know I still love Lilly. It's a huge position for my charitable trust. Member of the CNBC Investing Club, you'll know that. Because they put a lot of money into scaling up production, which is what really matters at this moment. Plus, I think the rest of the pipeline is very strong. But there's no denying the GLP-1 space will be a duopoly for quite some time. That's why I feel you can't go wrong with either of these stocks, because there's more room. There's really more than enough room for both of them. While Novo Nordisk is already up more than 28% year to date and 88% over the past 12 months, I'm betting it's got a lot more room to run. Next up, Citi calls out ASML. That's the massive Dutch semiconductor capital equipment maker. By the way, their equipment is the size of a bus, okay? A city bus. Now, this is another industry with only a handful of major players, an oligopoly with limited competition. But even here, ASML stands out for being basically unrivaled. These guys have an effective monopoly on some specific types of semiconductor equipment that are needed to make the most advanced chips. Even since the whole semiconductor complex bottomed late last year, this stock's been off to the races, up 76% from its lows last September, including a 31% gain since the beginning of the new year. By the way, when ASML reported in January, their net bookings came in at nearly 9.2 billion euros. You know, the analysts were only looking for a mere 3.57 billion? That's up 253% just since the previous quarter. That represents a staggering pickup in new orders. That's what Wall Street likes. Now, I want you to keep in mind, the U.S. is trying to block the Chinese from getting ASML's best machines. Yet the company still crushed the numbers. The third member of the Europe Super 7 is a very exciting one for a lot of people out there. It's LVMH, which stands for Louis Vuitton, Moët, and Hennessy. Now, that's LVMH, okay? This is the largest agglomeration of luxury goods on earth, built by the world's richest man, who's Bernard Arnault. Okay, they got extremely high-end apparel and jewelry. Think Louis Vuitton, Bulgari. Wow, that stuff's expensive. Dior, Fendi, Givenchy, Marc Jacobs, and Tiffany. If you're not into fashion, just know that Tiffany's arguably going to be the most downscale name on that list. They've got some other great, terrific names. How about a champagne, Dom Perignon, Moët and Chandon, a Veuve Clicquot, which we served at our wedding. It's completely irrelevant. They own Sephora, too, if you want cosmetics. We did not have our wedding at Kohl's, which also features Sephora. The one thing LVMH's businesses have in common is that they're aimed at the rich. And it's a good strategy. When these guys reported in late January, they delivered a blowout quarter. The stock's been a phenomenal long-term performer. I bet it can keep winning, although you might want to wait for a pullback. Fourth, there's Richemont. Oh, boy, this is interesting. It's a Swiss luxury goods play. You know, as Cartier, Piaget watches, along with Chloe, Montblanc, Peter Millar for accessories, and even their own digital red alarm, Net-a-Porter. I thought that we actually owned that company from the boxes in our hallway. It turns out that it's owned by LVMH. When Richemont reported in January, not only was the quarter strong, they also had some very positive things to say about China. Impressive given that so few other American companies, or European companies for that matter, are thriving in the Chinese market. These guys clearly got something special going. Next member of the Super 7 is SAP. German enterprise software company regularly comes to the show. Last start from July. It took SAP some time to adjust to the new world of the cloud, but they eventually got up to speed, and now they're making big money off artificial intelligence. Stock's up nearly 25% for the year, almost 150% from its lows less than a year and a half ago. It's probably not done. I should have caught it. I just decided to focus more on ServiceNow. Next, I was very happy to see Schneider Electric make Citi's Super 7 list. This is a French industrial that specializes in electric power products and digital automation. You know, it kind of reminds me of Eaton, which we own for the trust. The other night, I told you that demand for electricity is growing rapidly for the first time in ages, thanks to all the energy-intensive data centers that you need for artificial intelligence. Standard Electric is a great way to play that trend. Hey, get this. The stock's had a terrific move here, okay? Up more than 50% from its lowest last October. Some analysts have downgraded Schneider in recent weeks on valuation grounds. But I'm a believer because people don't understand the scale of the current data center build-out or the broader AI-fueled upgrade cycle. Last week, Salesforce's Marc Benioff told me that Schneider's been using Einstein and sampling it and loving it and being big on it now. It's done to apparently great effect. Finally, the last member of the Citi Super 7 is a company that needs no introduction. It's Ferrari. Race. Stock's up more than 700% since it started trading in the New York Stock Exchange in 2015. I remember I got one of those red coats. My wife said, take that off. You look silly. Ferrari's just an excellent business. The demand for their sports cars is incredible, in part because they intentionally limit the supply, giving them insane pricing power. Unlike nearly every other automaker on Earth, they didn't pour money into EVs, a shrewd move, instead opting to invest in hybrid powertrains, which is what people want. That now accounts for roughly half of the cars they sell. That said, Ferrari does have a fully electric car in the works that they plan to unveil later this year. You even get some Formula One exposure with Ferrari, which has the longest-running team in the racing league. The long-term numbers here are excellent, too. And while I'm always pretty positive on this one, I wish I had pounded the table. That was my bad, too. Now, here's the rub. As great as the Super 7 may be, you're not exactly early to any of these stories. Most of these stocks are trading at or near their all-time highs. Of course, you could say the same thing about Magnificent 7, but it makes me a little queasy to recommend something that's already had a huge run. So here's the bottom line. I want you to think of the Super 7 as a shopping list of high-quality European stocks that could be very attractive on a pullback. A shopping list brought to you by Dr. Beata Manthi and her terrific team at Citi. Mad Money's back in for the break.
Coming up, metalheads, shine your bullion. It's a 24-karat opportunity to make sense of the market. Kramer's going off the charts next.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Lately, everyone's been laser-focused on the incredible run in the artificial intelligence stocks, Cramer, Fave, NVIDIA. You also hear a lot of talk about the monster moves in crypto, with Bitcoin vaulting to new all-time highs. But while Wall Street's been consumed by the technological side of this rally, we've also seen a stunning move in something far more prosaic. We've seen it in gold. Yet the king of precious metals really caught fire this week. In fact, it made another new all-time high today, gold. It makes sense. Whenever you hear people pitching Bitcoin as a hedge against any future instability in the U.S. dollar, courtesy, of course, our bloated budget deficit, you've got to remember that gold was the original hedge against that. Gold protects you against inflation. It protects you against deflation, and not just in the United States. There's a much more important, kind of pseudo-currency for the rest of the world. I've long told you if you treat it as kind of insurance policy for your portfolio, that's the best way to look at it. Personally, I think gold's a better hedge against the risk of inflation or deflation because it's an actual hard asset. But obviously, something like Bitcoin has a lot more momentum right now. On the other hand, gold has a lot less risk, and you can carry it anywhere if you want to. But what about buying the precious metal as an investment, not just for insurance? Now, it's already shot up from the low 1800s in October to nearly 2,200 today. So we have to ask the most important question, can it keep running? To answer that question, we're going off the charts with the help of our resident commodities expert. That's Carly Garner. She's a brilliant technician who's the co-founder of DeCarly Trading and author of Higher Probability Commodity Trading. Last year, she pretty much nailed both the top in oil and bottom two, and she's feeling very good about gold. I want you to take a look at the weekly chart of gold. Garner points out that precious metals habitually spend years stuck in the trading range only to forge large and explosive rallies just when investors least expect it. Once they start running, traders who've been sidelined on they tend to buy hand over fist. You know what that is. That's FOMO, okay? That's the fear of missing out speaking. And when that happens, Garner says it forces prices up to levels that previously seemed unimaginable. And right now, she thinks gold has finally started to make that kind of FOMO move. Ever since 2020, gold has been stuck bouncing around, and you can see this, right, between $1,690 and $2,100. Garner points out that the precious metal tried to break out above its ceiling of resistance at 2100 on 4 different occasions. All right. And it didn't work, right? This year, though, we've witnessed the fifth attempt. And this time it blew right through the ceiling to new highs. Now, look at what happened before when gold tried and failed to clear this hurdle. The first two failed breakouts were met with sharp sell-offs that pushed the price down to the $1,700 area. And that's just brutal. This is a brutal decline. A lot of people really lost heart right there. But the third and fourth attempts were followed by less severe sell-offs. Didn't get down as low as that. And look, in fact, the last time when gold failed to break out late last year, it barely dipped below 2,000. That was it. Clarion call. Fast forward earlier this week, and gold finally cleared the $2,100 hurdle, only to immediately keep running to the point where it's now run most of the way to 2,200. So you see, we've really just been taken off here. Now, for Garner, this feels like fifth time's the charm scenario. As long as the price of gold can hold above $2,100, and we now have a nice buffer between where it's currently trading and that floor support, then she says, well, there's almost no technical resistance overhead until the precious metal gets into the $2,600 range. In fact, the next ceiling resistance doesn't kick in until 2,640, which would be obviously a rally that you definitely want to catch. How does Garner arrive at that target? Simple. If you look at the uptrend line from the 2016 high to the 2020 high and then keep projecting it out, it takes you to 2,640. Don't forget her original thesis here. Precious metals tend to trade sideways for years, but when they finally break out to the upside, they can experience explosive moves in a relatively short period of time. Garner's so confident in this move that she wouldn't back away from it unless gold made a weekly close below 2,000, which would make her second guess her bullish bias, but I've got to tell you, that's pretty far from here. Frankly, gold's been a bit of a riddle wrapped in a mystery inside an enigma for years now. Check out the monthly chart. Even with the worst inflation since the 80s, not just here, but all over the world, even with a major land war in Europe, even with an explosion in conflict in the Middle East, gold prices still came back down to its highs from back in 2011. I mean, this thing was really stuck. Think about it. For nearly 4 years, the fundamentals said this commodity should be roaring, and it just kind of stalled out. Now, though, gold's finally broken out to the upside, and Garner thinks it's simply playing catch-up with all the bullish narratives that the market basically has been ignoring for years. But she says you shouldn't be too surprised by that. This story unfolded because the gold market always is driven by emotion. It gets in a rut for ages, then it makes a big move, either to the upside or the downside, then it goes back to sleep. There is something unusual about this current rally, though. Take a gander at the seasonal pattern for the June gold futures, how the June futures for any given year tend to trade historically. At the moment, Garner points out that the seasonal pattern isn't really on your side. In fact, the most common pattern is for gold to peak in February, then sell off in March, then make another high in April before rolling over the summer. And that's what we're seeing right there. This week rally, it just completely contradicts those seasonal expectations. And according to Garner, counter-seasonal moves tend to be pretty dramatic. So is there a good historical analog here? Of course, Garner has it. Let's go back to gold's monthly chart. Garner thinks the current rally is similar to the gold rally in 2010. Prices started taking off in late 2009. Let's go all the way back here. Then we got a sharp, shallow correction, okay, in January and February before gold made a massive breakout. Shallow correction, and then massive breakout. But you know what? Went to 1,250, and after that breakout, the precious metal just kept running. The buying didn't exhaust itself until August of 2011. Gold peaked at just under $2,000 an ounce. If you bought gold when it broke out to a new high in 2010 and sold it near the top in the summer of 2011, you would have had a 56% gain. So when Garner says that gold could run to 2,600 this time, now we switch over to here, that might prove to be a conservative forecast. In 2011, we got a $700 breakout rally, which would take gold to $2,800 this time. And if you go by a percentage basis, we're talking about a move all the way to $3,300. Well, that does seem like a bit of a stretch. Now, here's the bottom line. Even though gold's already had a big move, the charts interpreted by Carly Garner suggest that it's got a lot more room to run. And you know what? I wouldn't bet against her on this one. Let's take some calls. Let's go to Mark in Iowa. Mark.
Hi, Jim. I'm a happy club member, and it was a good annual meeting. I'd like to see him maybe be biannual or more.
I like that. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, look, we're having some fun here. Jeff Marks and I are doing great. Frank Holland did a good assist, and of course, Regina Gilman was great. How can I help you?
Well, you know, I know that this company has a 22 P&E and a 2.5% dividend. It's been up a couple of bucks the past couple weeks. But what I really want to know is what the price of the commodity it has, what its sales price is going to do to the workings of the company. Gold is at a high right now. It reached that today. And how's that going to affect the workings of Barrick Gold?
I was very disappointed in Barrick Gold today. I tell you the truth, Mark, I've been disappointed in the last few weeks. It's done absolutely nothing. I'm going to have Mark Bristow on, but I don't know what he's going to say. I mean, what he's going to say, like, look, we're really doing great and we're not. This is disappointing. Mark's been on many, many times. I thought this stock, I looked at it several times in the last week. I thought it would be 17, 18. It's not happening. When it's not happening, I do get concerned. That's all I can say. I am concerned about that situation. How about Larry in Oklahoma, please? Larry.
Hello, Jim. This is Larry from Tulsa, Oklahoma, and I'm a first-time caller.
Excellent.
Oh, and Booyoski. I want to ask your opinion on One Oak. Ticker symbol.
One Oak is one of my absolute favorite companies. It's a great yielder. It's got 5%. And at the I don't know the CEO that well, but the CFO is my former neighbor, Walter Hulse, who is a genius in finance and has done everything he can to make that balance sheet much more strong than Wall Street seems to realize. The stock has been a real horse. Okay, even though gold's had a tremendous run already, the charts interpreted by Carly Garner, who is our commodities expert, suggest this move, it's going higher. Maybe it's even just gotten started. I would not bet against her on this. There is much more Mad Money ahead, including Cramer Fave and my Diversified. I'm going to put your portfolio to test. Maybe you have too much tech. Maybe you have too much momentum. We're going to make some changes. Then I'm bidding adieu to one of the best to ever do it in this business, the outgoing CFO of Costco, Rich Galanti, and telling you why they should be hanging his jersey in the rafters. And, of course, all your calls rapid fire in tonight's edition of the Lightning Round. So stay with Cramer. Major averages might hit some new all-time highs last week, but we're seeing some volatility creep back into the market. So is your portfolio prepared for what might come next? I mean, maybe you're loaded up with momentum tech that got crushed today. You feel like selling everything. That's why we play MI Diversified. This is where you call me, you tell me your top five holdings. I tell you, if your portfolio is diversified enough, maybe you need to mix it up a little. So why don't we start with Corey in Georgia. Corey, you're our first caller. What do you have for me?
Hi, good evening, Jim, and a big booyah to you.
Right
I'm
back
a
at you.
Long-time follower dating back to at least 98 and actually met you in your offices around 2000. Appreciate your advice, especially don't panic and cut your losers and let your winners run.
You my got that, stocks, Chief. You got that.
My five stocks tonight are AMD, NVIDIA, Builders FirstSource, Microsoft, and Costco, which I loaded up on early in 2020. Am I diversified?
All right. All right, let's go to work here. Obviously, Costco down very badly today. It was ridiculous. The company had a great quarter, just had run up into it. That's a retailer. Builders FirstSource is just a remarkable company. We profiled it and then had them on. That is a supplier to home builders, so those two are definitely okay. But here's where you have a problem. NVIDIA and AMD. AMD features itself as being maybe the junior NVIDIA, at least according to my friend Ben Reitzes. We're going to have to pick one of these two, at least as who do not take that personally, because we're going to put Eli Lilly here, and there's nothing the matter with being Eli Lilly. Now, Microsoft and NVIDIA, what do we do about those two? Well, I think that's a case where we're going to have to decide to put, yes, a new one, General Electric, now that it's all aerospace. So we have an aerospace, we have a drug company, we have a tech, we have a building supply company, and we have a retailer. I need to be worried about diversification here because of the confluence of tech stocks that all fell apart today. Next, we have Kay in California. Kay.
Hi, Jim. I'm a fairly new viewer and have been impressed with what I've seen.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And my stocks are Chevron, Eli Lilly, Visa, Berkshire Hathaway, and Walmart.
All right, let me go to work with a fairly new viewer who's got a fairly good portfolio. Eli Lilly, you know, is GLP-1. I was a little surprised that they did not get the nod for the dementia drug, but I think I'm going to hold off that for later this year. It'll be fine. Chevron, higher-yielding oil company run by Mike Worth. He does great We all know Warren Buffett and Berkshire Hathaway, which I'm now really just calling an insurance company with a lot of good different divisions. Visa is just a fantastic credit card company, and one of the largest companies in the world, by the way. And Walmart is the largest retailer. We got the largest, we got a retailer. We have a credit card company. We have, yes, I'm calling an insurance company with other divisions, obviously, an oil and gas company and a drug company. That is just perfection. Some people at home, take a picture of Case Portfolio, because this is exactly what you're trying to have. Let's go to AJ in Illinois. Please, AJ.
Hey, Jim. Big fan here. Pleasure to be on the phone with you.
Oh, thanks, AJ. What's going on?
So here's my portfolio, Jim. It's CLSK, CleanSpark, SMCI, Rivian, McDonald's, and Uber. Am I diversified?
Wow. Okay, so crypto, I prefer actually for people to own, just, you know, I prefer the Bitcoin ETF. I think it's good. There's an Ethereum ETF. It's going to be good, too. Uber is actually a technology moving company, is the way I regard it. It moves people, moves other things, and it's fantastic. Rivian is an auto company. They just introduced some new models. I'm concerned that they're not going to get the Georgia plant off the ground, because it's really important, because we want to go there. McDonald's just had a quarter that people didn't like, and yet, of course, the stock is higher than when it reported. That's not unusual. And Supermicro is a derivative of NVIDIA. So we have a derivative of NVIDIA. We've got a crypto, we've got an auto, we've got a moving technology company, and we have a food company, and I'm fine with that. I think it's good. Remember, this does have a little bit too much speculation. But if it's a younger person, it's fine. An older person might want to rethink that kind of portfolio. Let's go to Tony in Florida, please. Tony.
Hey, Jim. I know everybody says, but I really thank you and your team. And I love the morning show with you and Jeff. So.
Oh, thank you. We have a good time. I mean, we work hard. We have a good time. How can I help?
Yeah, my five stocks I have, and two of them are, you know, down and out right now, but I think they're going to come back.
Okay.
The first one's PFE, Pfizer. Second one is Palo Alto, PANW. And the other one is Kraft Heinz, KHC. Dividend play with Verizon, VZ, and Abbott Labs, APT.
All right, let's take a look. All right, Verizon's actually doing a little better than I used to think. And it's got a nice yield. Abbott Labs is on fire here. We bought it for the Travel Trust, and it's just, I think, goes much higher. They have four different divisions that are 20% that are growing faster than double digit. They didn't have that during the pandemic. Palo Alto, we know that this was the battle versus CrowdStrike this week, and CrowdStrike won. I'm not giving up on the Kesha Aurora. Kraft Heinz, I don't really have a lot of use for, frankly. I think it's a low growth, just a yield play that doesn't intrigue me. And then Pfizer, I'm betting that CGen reignites the growth there. In the meantime, you're being paid 5% to yield. But Abbott and Pfizer, you can't have both of those. We're going to pull out Pfizer. We're going to put in GE, yes, because I spent a lot of time talking to Larry Culp this week, who's the CEO, and I like aerospace. We're not going to keep the Kraft Heinz. If we're going to be in the food, if we're going to be in that segment, we're going to be in consumer goods. We'll be in Procter & Gamble, a Travel Trust name. Then we don't have any GOP-1 exposure. So we'll have a telephone company. We'll have an aerospace company. We'll have a drug company. We'll have a cybersecurity company. And we will have a consumer packaged good, and I'll feel terrific and can sleep at night with that. Let's go to Sebastian in Florida. Sebastian.
Hi, Jim. This is Sebastian from Tropical Paradise, Miami, Florida.
Love.
My five stocks are NVIDIA, Berkshire Hathaway, Class B, BlackRock, ARM, and Trane Technologies.
Ooh, very diversified. All right, we're going to work immediately. So NVIDIA, of course, as we own it, don't trade it. BlackRock, Larry Fink's doing a remarkable job. I was talking with my partner, Jeff Marks, about maybe that should be our next name for the Chapel Trust, maybe put in the bullpen. ARM is a little too much like NVIDIA. They are partners together. NVIDIA tried to buy ARM. We're going to have to take that out. We're going to put in Lilly on this discount. Train is a heating cooling technology company. It's called that. And Berkshire Hathaway is the giant insurer that is owned by Warren Buffett. It also has pipelines. It also has precision cast parts, and it has a big portfolio that includes Apple. So we've got a tech company, and then we've got a drug company. We have an insurance company. We've got a financial company, and we have a heating and cooling technology company. We have perfection. Thank you, Sebastian. Thank you for all our players. And yes, indeed, our team is amazing. Mad Money's back after the break.
Coming up, Kramer takes your calls, and the sky's the limit. It's a fast-fire lightning round. Next.
It is time. It's time for the lightning round. Pitch match for Golden Arrows and Sanders Sox. Bob, chips to the card. Of course, you know, your point is them. And then the lightning round is over. Are you ready, Ski Daddy? Time for the light round. Crimson's round. I'm going to start with Jonathan, Kentucky. Jonathan.
Hey, Jim, how's it going?
Hit me, Jonathan. Hit me. What's up?
I got a question for you about GE Healthcare, ticker GEHC.
Whoa, man. I mean, here's what I think when I hear that one. What do you want? Well, I'll tell you what you want. You want a stock that goes higher? That's GE Healthcare. Now, I did mention to Jeff today, Jeff Marks, my partner at the Chapel Trust, and we're saying maybe we should do a little schnitzel and take a little off. He suggested, no, let's keep it going. And I think he's right. The stock is still a not too expensive growth stock. Joseph in California. Joseph.
Booyah, Jim. How you doing?
Joseph?
Hey, Jim. Can you hear me?
Go ahead, Jeff. I'm sorry.
Hey, how you doing, Jim?
I'm doing well. How are you? What's going on?
I'm awesome. Hey, I just wanted to ask you a quick question. What do you think about BWXT?
I like Nuke, but the way I want to play it is with Vernova, which is going to be spun off by GE in April. You can open that pure play. You get wind, you get Nuke, and you get the grid being hardened along with turbines. Let's go to Dwayne in California. Dwayne.
Hi, Jim. This is Dwayne. I'm out here in San Diego. I've got a little company out here that I've been following since 1994. It's called Qualcomm.
All right, well, Qualcomm is a quandary to me because I don't think they have the horsepower to merit that stock being this high, but I understand people want to own it. It's not for me. Let's go to JC in Florida, please. JC.
Hey, booyah, Professor Kramer.
Thank you for tenure. What's up?
You know, my wife is more in love with you than me due to the amount of money you have made for us over the years.
Well, I'll tell you, man, yeah, you know, sometimes money, whoever said, who said money can't buy you love? I mean, completely, totally inaccurate.
He's even thinking about naming our dog in NVIDIA, but, you
well,
know.
Well, a little late. I think you got to have son of NVIDIA. I took that one. I took that name already. What's up?
So my question is, what are your thoughts on Ares Capital, symbol ARCC?
Okay, so here's the problem with this company. I have no idea what they really own. When I don't know what they really own, I can't get behind it because I could be surprised. It's had a good run, though. Let's go to Kathy in Arizona. Kathy.
Hi, Jim. First time, long time.
Oh, excellent.
Thank you. Thank you for all your teaching over the years. I'm shopping for that cashmere sweater.
Well, don't forget, you got to take the money off the table when you win at the slots or when you win at the stocks. What's going on?
You betcha. My stock's Coherent, C-O-H-R.
All right, red hot laser stock that actually has mojo, and I'm not going to tell you to not buy it. I am going to tell you, please wait for a little pullback because it's got that momentum feel, and they're taking momentum apart for a couple days. I need to go to Paul in Florida. Paul.
Hey, Kramer. Good afternoon, sir.
Hi.
Hey, I had a question. I have a small position in a stock called Pure Storage, ticker PSTG.
Yeah, it turned out they were the storage winner. I remember when the storage loser, the CEO came to see me. The stock was like 2021. He said, don't give up the ship. And you know what? It took a long time to turn around, but it is a winner. Let's go to Piroz in California. Piroz.
Hey, Jim. How's it going today?
It's going well. How about you?
Pretty good. I love your show. I tune
Thank
in
you.
Every morning to see you,
Thank you.
Carl, David, and
yeah, that's
Sarah.
A fun show. We don't even know what we're going to say to each other. We just, as soon as we sit down and the show starts, and there's like, I say, hey, because we don't want it to be canned. So much of TV's canned. You can't have that. What can I do for you?
Exactly. But yeah, just wanted to get to my stock here. They have a long-term debt to equity ratio of 0.06. The return on equity is 70%. Annualized sales growth over the last 5 years of 11%. The chart looks pretty good, and fundamentals look good as well. Just wanted to get your take on MANH,
Manhattan. So it is a very, very good company, and you just described it better than I could possibly, and it's a winner, and I congratulate you, and thank you for the kind words. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the conclusion of the Lightning Round!
Lightning Round is sponsored by Charles Schwab.
Rich Galanti, you will be missed. Last night, Rich took part in his last earnings call after almost 40 years as Costco's CFO. He's been the heart and soul of Costco, a major reason why this chain has become such an institution in this country and around the world. I know the stock got clobbered today, down more than 7%, but that's only because it had run up so much into what was actually a pretty darn good quarter. That decline's not Uncle Andy, but a lot of the advance may be. So what makes for a great CFO? First is someone who rolls up their sleeves, actually knows the stores, knows the people, knows the merchandise, and also knows the shareholders. It's someone who talks about profit and loss, not adjusted EBITDA or some ridiculous metric that they've made up, but to put the lipstick on a proverbial pig. Oh, and how about a sense of humor when the analysts ask the same questions over and over again about a special dividend or an increase in the membership fee? Oh, you need that too. Glady will tirelessly explain the business model. It's all about volume, not price. He wants you to get that $72 bottle of Camus wine that costs 100 smackers elsewhere, not because he loses, but he wins. While you're telling everyone how you beat Costco on Camus, you end up spending another $500 on goods that maybe you didn't even expect to buy. Costco is the great democratizer. Those who go often know that you have a melting pot of a market working in the stores with small business people taking advantage of the low prices and the high quality to build their own business. If you're a Costco supplier and you get out of line with price, look out. You might end up being Kirkland's signature pal. That tremendous house brand that's often better than the big-time consumer packaged goods alternative. Trading up is what I like to say. Oh, and there's the Invincible hot dog and soda for $1.50, not to mention those delicious free samples. You know, obviously I had some white for salad there. It was delicious, and I say that as someone with very high standards for smoked fish. We go to Costco 4 or 5 times a year to get all the big sizes of everything. We try to stay away from the meat, poultry, and baking goods aisles purely for health reasons. They should offer GLP-1 right there, or else you'll end up grabbing everything. Like I've said many times, I think Costco's at the vanguard of the fight against inflation. Glancy's done more to keep prices lower than just about anyone in Washington, save Jay Powell. Costco has enough scale to strong-arm its suppliers into giving them better deals. You have to sell there if you're going to reach that giant, loyal audience. That means you need to play by Costco's rules and keep prices lower than anyone else. That applies to everything from the ever-popular paper towel aisle to their liquor cabinet. Now, on a personal level, Rich seems to have something. I don't know. He's got something great for everybody. A few years back, I had some serious back surgery. It's the kind that kept me in the hospital for a bit with enough pain and not enough morphine. There was only one real respite during my tortured recovery, the text from Rich, with jokes every day that were actually laugh out loud funny. My wife, Lisa, prayed for the text to come in because I was being such a pill. Now, the analysts know this very special man. On the call, one of them suggested his jersey be hung in the rafters. Yes, he's that kind of guy. I would say, Rich, you will be missed. But I'm not missing you. I'm going to see you. That said, he'll certainly be missed in a professional capacity because you know what? There may never be another CFO as good as the wonderful Rich Galanti. I like to say there's always a market somewhere, and I promise you I'll find it just for you right here on Mad Money. I'm Jim Cramer. See you Monday. Last call starts now.
All opinions expressed by Jim Cramer on this podcast are solely Cramer's opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, or their parent company or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by Cramer on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed by Jim Cramer as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of his opinion. Cramer's opinions are based upon information he considers reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Mad Money disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/Mad Money disclaimer.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.